Welcome back, 34 past the hour. Well, after 11 months of intense scrutiny and massive exposure of his various sins, Mark Driscoll resigned yesterday, as you know, as pastor of Mars Hill Church in Seattle. And it was a day that I confess I didn't ever think would come. But I have to say, I am skeptical that we've heard the last from this man who has still not repented of various things, including plagiarism and the $210,000 that he took from his church to put himself on the New York Times bestseller list. It's also notable, according to Warren Throckmorton, Grove City College professor, and Patheos blogger who has followed this story very closely, and this is how he put it. According to those familiar with Driscoll's employment agreement, his written notice of his voluntary termination of employment is important because it triggers a very generous termination package of 1 year of base salary and benefits. And as we know, there has been a lot of financial implosion at Mars Hill. Warren, as I said, has been on top of this story continually since that whole interview with Mark Driscoll I did 11 months ago, and he is joining us now to weigh in with some of his thoughts. Warren, great to have you back. How are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
Just fine. Were you at all surprised with Driscoll's resignation? You've had your ear to the ground, I know, very closely. Were you expecting this?
Well, there were rumblings about it. Some had done a little more than speculate, but I didn't have anything I could point to, and I think that probably since it was just one of the options, you know, people were speculating about what might happen, but because of the way his employment agreement is written, now in hindsight, it makes some sense that instead of being demoted or being in some way censured, that he might just step down.
Now, the employment agreement, what do we know about that? And, you know, how much money is involved, the package itself? Do we know much? Do you know much about it?
Well, I don't know everything about it. What I have seen is some terms that include a one-year base salary and benefits package if the termination is voluntary and that there's no, you know, disqualification involved. And what I don't know is if he gave notice and then is now taking they actually have a 180-day notice period written into the agreement, unless the termination is based upon some kind of demotion or change in his status with the church.
Interesting. Now, there was a lot reported, and I know you talked about this extensively, in the non-disclosure, the non-compete agreements that he had people sign. Do we know if he had to sign any sort of non-compete agreement, or could he theoretically go out and start another church?
Well, I believe he could go do whatever he wants to do, right?
Yeah.
I don't think there's any limitation on that.
Okay. Now, as far as money goes, it's been reported that from internal memos, I guess you had seen, the salary was between $500,000 and $565,000 in 2012, and there was a recommended raise of $100,000 in 2013. That's a lot of money. I wish I would get a $100,000 raise. I mean, this is a lot of money. So he could potentially have a lot of money coming to him now.
Well, yes, that's right. No one knows the current salary. Well, I shouldn't say no one knows. No one outside of the executive elders and the board of advisors and accountability know. At least know because they were part of the process. And so it's very closed. It's probably the most carefully guarded secret, really,
right,
at the church. So it's hard to tell. It's probably still north of 600,000, but that's, you know, that's speculation.
We'll see. But, you know, we have been hearing all the reports about the fact that they are selling buildings off. They've had to lay off staff. They had Sutton Turner, his number two, resigning just a couple of months ago. I didn't see anything in this resignation letter of Mark Driscoll pertaining to his being willing to forego his severance or part of his severance. I don't know that he may have done something differently behind the scenes, but did you think that that was significant in any way, that in light of the financial problems, there didn't seem to be any misgiving on his part in taking that severance package?
Well, you're right. We don't know if he did or didn't. We don't know what arrangements they made. I'm just aware of the terms of the employment agreement, at least what I've seen. And there certainly, as you say, there wasn't any obvious rejection of it, or any statement that because of the problems the church is facing, you know, I'll do something different. And you're right, the church is in a really sad way when it comes to their loan covenants, and the buildings have been very highly leveraged, and many of them are now on sale.
Incredible. Well, we're going to go to a very quick break. When we come back, more with Warren Throckmorton, Grove City College professor and blogger extraordinaire who's covered the Driscoll story all along. We'll come back and get more of his thoughts on the resignation of Mark Driscoll after this. Four past the hour on the Janet Mefford Show. My guest, Warren Throckmorton. He has blogged at Patheos continually over the last 11 months about Mark Driscoll, who resigned as pastor of Mars Hill Church yesterday. Quite a bombshell of a story. I'm sure it's not over, but we are getting some of his thoughts on the whole matter. So, Warren, one of the questions I had pertaining to the finances of Mars Hill, and as you mentioned before, they're selling buildings and they're in a bad financial situation. What is the situation with the ECFA? This is the Evangelical Council for Financial Accountability. There have been some questions about whether or not ECFA backs Mars Hill. What can you tell us about that issue?
Well, yeah, glad you asked. That's one of the stories that I think is going to persist even past the resignation. The Mars Hill promoted, beginning in 2012, they promoted a sort of a mission fund. They called it Mars Hill Global, and there was a global fund that members and non-members alike could give to. As it turns out, there was some planning involved to tell people that there would be some mission programs funded, but that most of the money would end up going to U.S. expansion. And in fact, that's what happened. The church has admitted that the preponderance of the funds that were brought in through this Mars Hill Global brand actually went to purchasing buildings in Washington State and expanding the Mars Hill brand. And this is not consistent with the guidelines of the ECFA. And so many have asked, and there are two petitions live online asking the ECFA to bring accountability to the situation and have Mars Hill Church disclose how much money was actually spent on missions in India and Ethiopia and how much money was actually spent on buying buildings in the United States or whatever else that they may have done with the money. We're talking about $2 to $4 million, someplace in that neighborhood, and the church has consistently refused to disclose the expenses. Now, the ECFA guidelines are fairly clear that the donor intent has to be taken into account and that the funds have to be spent in accord with donor intent. The ECFA has been pretty quiet about this. They've not done anything with Mars Hill's accreditation by their organization. And they, according to Mars Hill, the ECFA has even looked into the church's handling of the Global Fund, but yet has not issued a public statement of their findings in accord with their own guidelines. And in fact, the ECFA has removed the web page that contains those guidelines. When I asked the president, Dan Busby, about when this public statement would come out and when they would conform to their guidelines, the web page disappeared.
Goodness.
I don't know what they're going to do. This is something that I think is an ongoing issue and has raised a number of questions about who's watching who and, who's really holding anybody accountable.
Interesting. Well, I'm sure you're going to be staying on that story, right, and bringing us up to speed.
Correct.
Very good. Right. Very good. Well, what about the, going back to Driscoll's resignation yesterday, the severance and so forth, the church has now said Dave Bruskus is going to be leading the church. He's going to be the pastor, at least for the time being. But what are you hearing about where things go from here for the church?
Well, there is there's a lot of discussion about the governance of the church during the last few years. From about 2007 on, the church moved to a very small group of people governing it that had any control over where funds were spent or what kind of policies were pursued. The members of Mars Hill have no vote on anything, and the full council of elders only vote on changes of statement of faith, and they vote on a they vote on who's on the board of advisors and accountability. If they're deadlocked, though, if they can't come to a conclusion, the same board of advisors remain in place. So they're pretty. The board of advisors, there's right now only five of them. They're pretty insulated from change. They would have to vote themselves out of existence. But that is what some of the elders are discussing, that the concentration of power in such a small with such a small number of people may have been one of the contextual factors that has led to the abuse of power and the culture of fear and some of the things that have been discussed leading to, you know, Reverend Driscoll's decline. And so that perhaps the context needs to be changed, the governance needs to be changed. So I think that internally there will be many struggles, many discussions over how to best govern the church. And then I think the other real serious challenge is, of course, financial. They've lost nearly half their attenders, down around 7,500 or so attenders from somewhere near 14,000, 15,000. Their giving is significantly down. Mars Hill's always been a church that's promoted giving, and you know, just about every appeal has something to do with giving. Well, it's even greater now, and I think fewer and fewer people are going to be asked to give more and more, which may be a very hard model to sustain.
Boy, that's incredible. And you know, talking about the Mars Hill Board of Overseers, they had put out this statement yesterday on their assessment of Mark Driscoll, and they said, while we believe Mark needs to continue to address certain areas about his temper and his harsh speech, we do not believe him to be disqualified from pastoral ministry. This is a theme that Driscoll picked up on in his own statement. Right. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that that's a nod to helping him have a future. I think it'd be harder to have some kind of future ministry if a board like that had declared you disqualified. It would also, I think, erode what credibility he might have even with his supporters if they had come to that conclusion. I think that that's interesting in reading the statement about the investigation that the Board of Advisors did not actually include findings from the Board of Elders report, or at least they weren't clear where those findings came from. They indicated that they had made those determinations. It's not at all clear, for instance, that the Board of Elders report agrees with their findings, because the way that the process was done, the Board of Elders did the investigation, the Board of Advisors did the deciding. There may be differences we don't know about.
Yeah, there's so much we don't know, but we're going to go to another break. We'll come back. Warren Throckmorton joining me talking about Mark Driscoll's resignation, his thoughts when we return. We are back 5 minutes before the hour. Warren Throckmorton joining me. He has blogged very, very closely about Mark Driscoll over these last 11 months, and we're getting his thoughts on the resignation of Mark Driscoll yesterday. You have covered so much about Mars Hill, but back to the issue of Mark Driscoll himself, Warren, there are those who are saying, well, now that he's gone, he's probably just going to lay low, come back with an explosive book talking about his healing, you know, down the road, probably published by Tyndale House. and, you know, make a triumphant return in all this. But do you get the sense from his resignation letter that he really understood the extent of his sin, the harm that he did, the wrong that he did?
No, not really. It didn't come across as that kind of a letter. It came across more as a letter that you would write to your employer, you know, terminating your employment, which is, you know, really what it was. It served as written notice to the board of advisors. So I don't know if that's by releasing it, I think they wanted to give the congregation some notice as well, in his own words, but it didn't come across as that type of letter.
No, it didn't. And there was no mention of the plagiarism, most of which he's never repented of publicly. Mm-hmm. There's no mention of the $210,000 and the ResultSource scandal. None of that wasn't mentioned. You have covered, as I've mentioned, this story so closely, and I know a lot of people have given you a hard time, and I always stand with you on that. But why do you think this has been such an important story to cover this closely?
I think people are fascinated with the megachurch development in American Christianity, just the sheer wealth that is involved, the amount of money, in some ways controlling environments that are created in those kind of situations. People seem to be fascinated with celebrity, whether it's within the church or out of the church, and I think you have so many elements in the story that fascinate people, particularly when it comes to, as I say, when it comes to wealth and money and the interplay between that and religion. It is such a disconnect between the teachings of Christ and the business-like approach of not all megachurches, but, you know, some megachurches. And in this case, it seemed as though it was a kind of Christian version of American greed. Without knowing anybody's motives or everybody's motives, I think that's what draws people to a situation like this. Is this really happening in what we call a church? It's just fascinating to many people.
It is. Well, we'll continue to read you. Warren Throckmorton, blogging over at Patheos from Grove City College. Warren, as always, wonderful to have you here. Thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Take care. We'll be back. Thanks again for being with us. All right. We'll be seeing you.